Okay, so welcome back to this week's edition of the Rock and Roll Ghosts podcast. This week we have musician Vonda Shepherd, whose new album Red Light, Green Light is available now. Welcome to the show, Vonda. Hope you're doing well today.
Hey, thanks, Brett. I'm doing great. Thank you.
All right, no problem. Well, the first question is, what can you tell me about making this new album? What sets it apart from maybe anything else you've put out? You put out 9 studio albums, 3 live albums, and then, as most people may recognize you from, Alec McBeal, which is celebrating, I guess it's 25 years ago, that show. That seems very hard to believe.
I agree. I totally agree.
So what differentiates this album from your others?
Let me see. I guess the biggest difference is there was a pandemic, you know, so I wrote a little bit about that here and there. It affected some of the songs. Like there's a song called To the Stars. And what you get from the song is, you know, the first line is breathe the air I forgot was there, because I'm outside, you know, because we're outside so much. Let's see. And then the chorus is to the stars we will fly. But that's just a metaphor, because I felt so stuck in the house, as we all did. And a lot of, yeah. So, and then even the song Disappear has to do with being kind of really disenchanted with all that was going on politically, and I just wanted to disappear from this earth, and not really disappear, but just from all that was going on.
Right.
But in the chorus you'll also find like the uplifting feeling of I think life is beautiful despite this, because I still see the beauty in nature and in friendship and food and, you know, all of that stuff. So
Well, the interesting thing was that you got married to Mitchell, your husband, the year before the pandemic, so I would have to imagine that was a real test for the marriage, because you guys were probably, you know, you didn't have anywhere to go for a while. How was that whole process for you? And he produced the new album as well.
Right. I'm not sure where you got that information, because we are having our 20th wedding anniversary.
I don't know why I thought that.
I love that you thought that. That's funny.
I swear I just read that today. I was like looking up, like I didn't realize you two were married, and I thought I saw 2019.
No.
Okay, well, that's completely wrong, or I read it wrong.
It's whatever the case may be. It's just so funny how stuff is out there. That's some of it's true, some of it's not.
Yeah.
Yes, no, we literally are celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary. We've been together 24 years.
Wow. So
the pandemic, though, you know, I mean, we worked it out like everybody kind of did, unless they, you know, got in divorce, because it was, but we worked it out, and we found a way of, you know, sharing the space. We're lucky because we have a studio in, you know, right, the structure of our house. So that's where, you know, one of us would go out and work. And, you know, we get along well, and that we were in doing pre-production, you know, I take a deep breath and say, okay, here he goes. He's about to tell me, you know, what he thinks of this song. And,
right.
And I've gotten used to that process, and he's so brilliant that I'm just really open to hearing what he has to say.
Yeah. I you know, well, bouncing off of that, how is it to, I'm sure in one hand to have somebody that's a musician and has his background is great for collaborating or bouncing ideas off of, but is it also like, okay, you're just, I don't know why, but you're just being critical of something or whatever because we had a fight last night or something like that?
You're trying to get to the deep, you know, moments.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
You know, sure. You know, there's always, I'm sensitive, you know, and of course, you know, there are moments like that, but I have to separate it. I have to compartmentalize
the
relationship, and I've gotten pretty good at it. And he also knows me so well that he knows to not go, you know, this really sucks, this part of the song, you should just dump it. He instead will come up with like a really cool chord change or bass note change. And then I kind of get really excited about that new section of the song. So it's good. Yeah.
No, because I'm just thinking that it's weird how in relationships where if you're showing something to your partner, their reaction is far more personal than showing it even maybe to a friend or a casual you know, as somebody you know casually, it's just different. So if they don't react the way you're hoping for, it's got. I know in the past, I my ex-wife, I used to show her some things, and she was like, I don't know, So marriage and music is always an interesting thing to me, just like marriage and film or any art, really. You know, if it's the same kind, you know, different kinds, I think, you know, that doesn't maybe come up as much, but I don't know. I couldn't say, but now I'm rambling.
I wonder the same thing with other, like Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig, you know, like they're married or they're not married, but they're together and both major, you know, directors and writers and filmmakers and, you know, both up for Oscars. And, you know, I wonder the same thing about other people. Yeah. And, but in my life, like I'll go to Mitchell, I'll say, okay, I'm going to play, you know, he'll have to beg me to play him my new stuff. And I'm going to play it, but just remember, just be careful. Like, so it's good. It's it works.
So what was the process like for making the new album? When did you begin? How does your writing process start? Do you just kind of collect songs and then move them from working the ideas out to demoing to then saying, okay, well, this group here is pretty good for, you know, perhaps, you know, changing around some things or, you know, but as a group of songs, they fit for what I'd like to put together as an album. How did that all work out?
Well, I used to just write all the time, you know, constantly from the age of like 8 or 9, literally, I would write all the time. And once the songs started, I always had songs going and that all made sense and fit together. In this case, and the last album, I'd say, I made a conscious decision to write an album, which is it's a daunting task. But because my life is a little more, you know, it's just so different having children and, you know, all that goes with that. And it's the fantastic part of my life, but I have to be much more disciplined and make a decision. So I did that. I said, okay, it's no excuses. It's the pandemic. I have a lot to say. So I started with one song and I just got into the, you know, into the mill and worked every day, you know, writing these songs and honing the lyrics, because I like lyrics to be really, really as good as possible. So it was a lot of discipline, but it was very gratifying in the end.
Well, when you talk about working every day, what does that look like? I mean, do you wake up, you do like, you know, a couple things around the house, and then you, I don't know whether or not your kids were, you know, what age they are, but if they go to school or whatever, and then you kind of say, okay, now I have time, you go where to the piano or what have you, or where you're at now. And do you just kind of start, you know, what comes first? Do you have a melody? Do you have some lyrics? Is it different all the time?
Well, my routine is I like to exercise in the morning, get everything going, and, you know, take care of the house and make sure that, you know, everyone's okay. During the pandemic, it was different because my son was home from school the whole, you know, first year, and that was hard. But for him, and but the process is kind of similar to how it's always been, where I have a sort of a melody and some maybe gibberish and maybe a couple of chords, and then there's the gibberish I spend a lot of time editing and realizing what my subconscious is trying to, you know, say, and it'll trigger ideas, so then I take it from there. I use my iPhone, I set it up, I just start playing and singing, and then I have to spend the tedious hours of listening and then finding the good parts and then learning them, because it's amazing how you can just be playing, and I've been playing since I was 6 years old, so my hands just go places, and then I go, whoa, that's really good, what was that? And I don't necessarily know what it is, and I have to go relearn it. It's a long process.
When you had the group of songs together, what was the actual recording like? Did you record at home, or did you get a studio? I'm sure at some point you were able to work outside your home, but I can't say if you actually did that or not.
Well, we did not. We have a recording studio in the house. That's where Mitchell makes all his albums.
Okay.
It's the structure I was telling you about, the studio separate from the house. So we have a very, this is it, by the way. Hi.
Okay. Oh, very cool. Yeah. I couldn't see all the equipment. It almost looked like there was a dishwasher back there until you turned and I saw the stacks.
I know my sister gives me a lot of, you know, grief because I don't have it all perfect in the background. So
this it's just where you're sitting, you're covering up like
piano in back of me, and we've got lots of other keyboards over there and a drum room and
you have one of those dream California studios.
We kind of do. It's not huge, but it suits what we need since we have the drum room. We have a little bathroom over there for the. But so what we did was my bass player drove down a couple hours. They all heard the song. So yes, we did demos. That we sent them the songs because we didn't want to be in the room too much together because of the pandemic. We all wore masks until I sang. And you know, I'd play the piano and track with the drummer Michael Urbano, who's an amazing drummer, and my bass player. And then we ended up overdubbing my guitar player James Ralston from Vegas, where he lives, because he, you know, he's older. He has some, you know, he had to be careful. So that was really tedious because he did like 10 tracks of guitars on each song, and then we had to dig through them and go, okay, yeah, we like this, we don't like this. So it took a while, but the end result is, I think, really good. And then Mitchell did his keyboards, and then I did my background vocals and my vocal.
Very cool. So what kind of timeline did that whole thing take from start to finish? More like when you actually started to bring the band in.
I think it was 3 or 4 weeks.
That's not bad.
No, not bad at all. And then there was the mixing took about a week. And then we mastered it, of course. So but the most of the work was in the pre-production. It took about a year and a half, I'd say, of writing pre-production, a year and a half.
Is it nice to be able to, you're at a point in your career and Mitchell as well, so you're in I'm guessing you're in a decent place where you can take that kind of time, especially during something like the pandemic where, you know, touring is completely out of the question. Is it nice to be able to have that luxury to be able to relax and ease into making something, as opposed to perhaps the old ways where somebody from a label was banging on your door waiting for something to come out?
It is. We're very grateful for the position we're in. We're not like, you know, we're not like some people in this town, but we're fine, you know. Yeah. And believe me, I appreciate it every day. I appreciate that we have a nice home and a studio, and we're not like stressed about money. But also, Mitchell just joined 3 years ago the band Crowded House.
Right.
So he produced their first three albums. So he sometimes would go on tour with them even during the pandemic because New Zealand had no COVID, like zero. And that's where they're from. So he did like a full-on tour. So, you know, he made some money, got to go be a rock star and all of that. So, but in general, I hear what you're saying. And yes, I'm very, very fortunate, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it has to be a great thing as an artist, because as an artist, most people's, especially struggling artists, most people's issue is being able to live and try to make music too. So, you know, it is nice, and also great on him that he got to leave and go party for a while in a rock band and left everybody else at home.
I know, totally. You know, you just reminded me, when I was first starting out on Warner Brothers, I got signed to Warner Brothers, but I you know, they didn't give me a very big advance. I still needed to make a living and survive. And my manager also managed Al Jarreau. So I toured with Al Jarreau while I was, you know, actually had an album coming out and out, and I was on the road in like Europe going like, wait a minute, I have an album too. So I toured and to make a living, because yeah, I was stressed about money. So
I saw you, Al Jarreau, Jackson Browne, and Ricky Lee Jones as well, correct? Were you singing or playing piano or both?
Well, with Ricky Lee and Al, I was singing and playing keyboards and piano. Ricky Lee was an amazing situation because I was playing her alter ego. It was 1985. Wow. And it was the magazine tour. And so I would walk out on stage to the grand piano and people would go crazy because they thought I was her, because we don't look similar, and you know, why would I be walking out first? And I play the first chords to, you know, I think it was one of those magazine. Anyway, so keyboards and piano, and then with Jackson, I just sang backups, which was really cool. Really cool.
What years were you with Jackson Browne?
It was 95 and 96.
Okay.
And I don't know if you heard this, but like in 95, I'd be doing sound check and I'd kind of play these songs from the album It's Good Eve, which was one of my, I think one of my best albums. And he would hear the songs that I'd be playing at sound check. And he basically said, if you can finish an album by next summer, you can open for me and sing with me. And he let me use his studio for a whole month, like his awesome studio.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was so generous. And then when I got Ally McBeal, I paid him back for the studio time, like a month. I wrote him a check for like $25,000. I went, here you go. Thank you. And it felt so good.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. It's also a very nice thing on his part. I mean, you know, it's hard to know established artists. Like some people, you know, don't want anything to do. You know, they have that whole thing where they want to be left alone. And then you have Jackson, who's been doing it forever, that was so so generous. It's very awesome.
So generous. And there's a song called Piece of the Pie by Randy Newman. I don't know if you know it.
No, he's got a lot of songs.
I know he does. So the chorus is, no one gives a shit but Jackson Browne. It's so Randy. And it's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I grew up with Randy Newman's music here and there. I always knew that he was a kind of a sardonic, snarky guy from growing up, and then I kind of discovered some stuff later. And then of course he's gone so, you know, in some ways so opposite with the Toy Story stuff and everything. It's like, well, that's the same guy that did Short People back in the 70s. It's like, it's funny. I don't want to touch too much about Ally McBeal, because I don't know. It's a significant part of your thing, but I'm sure you get asked about it all the time. But I did hear something about there being some sort of revival, perhaps. What truth to that is there? And if there is some truth to it, what do you know about it at this moment?
All I know is basically what you know, that there is a reboot, and it's not, as far as I know, none of the main cast are in it, but I could be completely wrong. And I have not been asked to be involved.
Okay.
I know David Kelly is not writing it.
So. Oh, then there's the thing. Yeah.
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 So that's all I know. Yeah, that's all I know.
Yeah. Well, then forget it. Who cares? If you're not going to have the guy that created the show involved, then, you know, I mean, for God's sake. But it sounds like something completely silly. But we'll and then again, a lot of people thought Ally McBeal was silly at the time too. So who knows?
Who knows? And I don't think. I think they may have asked David, but I don't think he related to the way they were going to do the show. I don't want to get in trouble.
No. I get what you're saying. Yeah, no, that happens. If somebody owns the rights to something and says, hey, we want to do this, you could be with it or you could not be with it. And, you know, well, I don't like what, you know, maybe you're doing, so forget it, you know.
Yeah,
but they're rebooting everything nowadays. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not good.
Yeah.
And you know, doesn't seem like a lot of originality out there anymore.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. Sorry, I had to get a drink of water.
No, you're good.
It's weird. I didn't watch TV for 30 years because I went on tour in the 80s.
Yeah.
I toured in Europe in 1986 for 4 years with Al Jarreau, and I stopped watching TV then because back then there were only 3 German channels or whatever. And so until Ally McBeal, I hadn't seen TV in 30 years.
Yeah.
So I understand, you know, what you're saying.
That's a kind of a cool thing to have. And I bet probably the only thing on German TV you understood was when David Hasselhoff popped up.
Right.
I would love to watch. I've been to England and I don't remember TV at all. Mm-hmm. Although I'm an Anglophile, so. Not an Anglophobe. I almost said that. Not Anglophile. And I like a lot of British TV shows. But other than that, I've never been to another country where, like, you know, the TV is vastly different from what we have.
Yeah.
So I think that that's the idea of that's fascinating. But of course, if you don't speak German and you're in Germany, it's going to be a little hard to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, a little boring.
So you're in the LA area, correct?
Yes.
You've lived in LA for a long time now. What about LA took to you that, besides the music business kind of being there, what was it about LA that made you stick around?
Well, you know, I grew up here and then I lived in New York.
Oh, you did?
I grew up here, yes.
Oh, I thought you lived in New York. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you're not completely wrong. I was born in New York. Okay. And then at the age of 1.5.
Oh, so it was against your will.
And they dragged me to LA. Screaming the whole way. And then I lived for a year in New York right before I got Ally McBeal. So I had 1 year of like climbing 5 flights of stairs, you know, after walking in the rain with groceries. And, you know, I had that whole experience.
Yeah.
I loved it. But then I got the show and that pulled me back. So
that's awesome. Well, what do you, is there some, because I'm trying to get out to LA and I know a lot of people kind of from other places knock it, but what are your favorite things about living in LA?
The beach, I would say, you know, the ocean, the clean air. We don't live on the ocean, but we live close enough where we get the good air. Yeah. The weather is good. It's been raining, as you probably heard, like crazy here.
Yeah, that's been an unusual turn of events.
Yeah, but I actually love it, as long as people are safe. And I mean, what do I like about it? It could use, in my opinion, other cities have better restaurants, but I think that's just my neighborhood. I think I need to go downtown. I'm sure there are tons of good places. Mostly just, I guess, the weather and the nature, you know, driving up to Malibu and seeing the palm trees and the ocean and the mountain.
Yeah, when I go, I definitely am eager to I haven't been near the ocean since my family went on a Hawaii trip when I was like 6 or 7 or something. And I still have this sense, every now and again, I have sense memory of the Hawaiian beach and of the air and all that stuff. It's the weirdest thing. And I'm like, oh my God, I would love to just see what, you know, smell what that's like again, you know, one day. I like the idea of California a lot. It as a Chicagoan, it might be a little too sunny too often for me, but, you know, I think I could trade that for some of the other negatives of living in the Midwest. Well, I did want to ask you, I mean, you've got the album out. Do you think you're at a point where you'd consider touring again, or where are you at with that?
Oh, I've been touring, actually.
You have been? God, I am terrible today.
Don't worry. Okay, I toured in the UK the whole month of October. So we did that, and we got back, and now I leave Monday or Tuesday, I think, for the East Coast.
Okay.
Playing the Ram's Head in Maryland on Wednesday. We're playing Philly City Winery. We're playing New York City, 54 Below. I'm going to play some APAP shows. That's Performing Arts Centers. Try to get into that circuit. I'm gonna do some live TV, Good Day New York, you know, and that kind of
very
stuff.
Cool.
And then we go to Europe in the whole month of February. I go to Europe. I go to France, Germany, Belgium, and the Netherlands.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So how long is this next? I mean, the American tour is a few weeks, and then the European tour starts, correct?
The American tour is really short, so it's kind of, nobody's calling it a tour, but let's call it a tour.
It's 2 weeks, or whatever it is, seems like a tour.
Yeah, it's like a week. Week.
Okay, so it's less than I even thought. Okay.
Little East Coast run, and then get ramp up for Europe.
Okay. Do you have plans on doing something bigger here later in the year, perhaps?
We're looking at the summer. I'd love to get on some festivals and some wineries and, you know, places that are pretty and nice people and want to hear music. So we're working on the summer right now, actually.
Have you ever played Ravinia in outside of Chicago?
No. What is it called?
Ravinia. It's a it's an outdoor thing. It's in a kind of a ritzy area, and it, lots of people play there. You know, you would kind of fit right in. I've seen John Mayer there. I've seen, I think Billy Corgan lives, he lives out that way. So he did like a show 1 year that I saw, and a lot of, you know, singer songwriter people tend to come through town and do that. They have like orchestras sometimes and stuff like, it's very, you know, they got like a whole thing where the people sit on lawn chairs outside of the pavilion and they bring their wine and, you know, their cheese and all that stuff. It's very nice.
I love that. It's just fun. It's fun playing outside. People are happy and relaxed. It's not like an uptight feeling. So yeah. I'll check
video. Yeah. Ravinia. Ravinia.
Ravinia. Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
So I'm excited to go on tour. We're going to keep booking stuff. And as I've been saying lately, I'm going to just go until I drop, because it's just, it's just a great life. You know, I'm lucky. I get to do it and I really appreciate it. So I'm going to keep going as long as I can, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So I'll end it on kind of a upbeat question. Whether or not we haven't gotten anything downbeat, but what is your favorite thing to do that has nothing to do with, say, music in any way? What is the thing, like, even if it, you know, is going out somewhere with your family or something, like, you know, do you enjoy crossword puzzles? What is the thing that you absolutely love to do that people might not realize?
I'd say read. That's it. Yeah. Reading books, it's like heaven for me, just like, but I have to have things very quiet. So I have a lounge chair downstairs. I have a nice reading light. I have a thing, pillow for my head. And I'm so happy just sitting there reading a great book. Like right now I'm reading The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I think I've actually heard of that.
Yeah, it's so I get the New York Times top 100 books of the year, and I buy like 80 of them and stack them up. That's my favorite thing, reading, and also hiking, and you know,
what's hiking like in Los Angeles? I know that I've, you know, if even with the internet nowadays, the things you hear from people, you know, you hear as someone that's not living in LA, is that coyotes are running rampant and killing people.
Hilarious. I've never seen one coyote on any hikes I've done. Not yet. I did see a rattlesnake though. Ooh. It was the summer and I was hiking this very steep hike, and you know, it's gorgeous. It overlooks the ocean. But all of a sudden I see this like an actual, and I took a picture of it and zoomed in on it, and it was a rattlesnake. And but no, there aren't coyotes like, you know, smoking cigars and running rampant.
Well, you know, it's like when Jaws came out, everybody didn't want to go into the ocean because they thought a shark was going to kill them.
True. No, I was afraid of it myself. I'd say nature. I love reading. I like to cook when I'm not stressed. I like to cook a really good meal. I like to get into, you know, presenting a gorgeous meal for my family.
What's your best thing that you make?
I make a lot of Italian stuff. Like, I guess my best thing is probably simple aglio olio, you know, with about 30 garlic cloves chopped up, fresh parsley, red chili flakes, and a lot of olive oil, you know, sauteed and mix in with the pasta al dente. That's probably the best thing I make. Yeah. But I get like grilled fish. Anyway, yeah, I made Ottolenghi's very full tart. It's got all these roasted vegetables. It takes forever. I'm not going to do it for the year. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sounds like something very involved.
It's too involved. It's literally a once a year thing, maybe twice a year.
Yeah, you forget long enough to forget how much time and effort went into it and say, hey, you know, that tasted really good. I'll do it. It's like, you know, it's like certain things where you don't do it for long enough. You don't remember the bad part of it. You just remember how good it was. So you was like, okay, I'll do it again.
You're so right. For a Christmas Eve, I made a nut roast for my vegan family people. And it took me forever. And I said, I'm never making this again. And my stepdaughter said, that's what you said last year.
Yeah, that's very typical. I hear that from my mom when she makes something that she vows to never make again, and it's like, well, and then it shows up again. It's like, well, forget it, I'm not even gonna say anything. Well, Vonda, I really appreciate you taking the time today. Red Light, Green Light is out now. Check her out on, I'm sorry, was it Good Day New York you said you were going to be on?
Yeah, I'll be on a week from Monday. I'll be on Good Day New York live.
Okay.
And you can get my, and this is ridiculous, but you can get my CDs on my website. I have someone who mails them out for me. It's like,
that's cool.
Most people don't have CD players anymore, but if you want it, you know, I have them. So. Yeah,
that's awesome. Or you could probably buy it digitally as well.
Oh, yes, you can.
We won't say how else to get it because we want you to make some more money.
Yeah, we want to be able to keep making albums and keep it all going. So downloading it is the best for me. Like,
you download
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Legally paid for downloading.
Right, right.
Not that other guy.
Exactly. Well, it's good to chat with you. Thank you so much. Yeah,
thank you as well, Vonda. I hope you have a great rest of your day and good luck with the tour and the album.
I appreciate it. Thank you. You too.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Bye.